Yeah, I don't know how you top that. I think the miraculous restoration of the water bottle is a great encouragement. If anybody's interested, I've lost about $13,000 in my 401k since the third quarter of this year. So if you find that, please let me know. I'd appreciate that too.
Okay.
Oh, is that where it is? Okay. I do this to myself every year. I call Tim around Pesach and ask him what the theme of the Sukkot's going to be, and then I spend 6 months pulling out data to see how I can support the underlying theme. And I'll have to confess before we get started, about 70% of the material that I've discovered I cannot put in 2 hours worth of presentation. So I'm going to try to get in as much as I can. So I'm going to ask you to put your seatbelts on, and we're going to scoot right through this stuff really quickly. The title of my presentation is Living the Life of Prophecy, Part 1. In 1733, a book was posthumously published 7 years after the death of its author, Sir Isaac Newton. Observations of the Prophecies of Daniel and the Apocalypse of St. John. Here we go. This book is from the private communications between Sir Isaac Newton and Ben J. Smith, who later dedicated the publication of this correspondence to Peter King, who was the Lord King Chancellor of Great Britain at that time, 7 years after Newton's death. Newton, from the age of 18 until the death of his age at 84, had studied the Book of Daniel to such a degree that he taught himself Hebrew and Chaldean so that he could read the Book of Daniel in its original languages. During this time, Newton had discovered a mathematical algorithm in which the Torah predicted the future of Israel. This mathematical algorithm comes from the text of Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. I did a presentation on this when we were in Tennessee. Was that 2015?
2007.
Okay. So maybe Tim's got it in a hard drive somewhere back in the closet. When the algorithm is applied to the history of Israel and later into Judah, Newton's math shows an expectation of Israel returning to the land 215 years after the publication of his work on May the 14th, 1948. In the early presentation, I show you how to do all that math work that Newton did and how it works out. Now, I am convinced that this represents what Paul writes about in the book of Romans at 11:25, the fullness of the Gentiles. And in the history of mankind, this is when we shift history to the focus of what Israel is doing and what Israel is accomplishing up until the time of the return of the Messiah. Here in the restoration of Israel is called for by the Gentile nations on the 29th of November, 1947, a resolution establishing of a Jewish state in Eretz Israel. Okay, I really need the time here to get from slides. Every U.S. president from Harry Truman to Barack Obama has refused to move the embassy, even though by statute from the Senate, it's a requirement that the embassy should be in Jerusalem no later than May the 31st, 1999. It was actually Donald Trump that moved the embassy into Jerusalem, curiously, exactly 2,520 days from the time that the UN called for the establishment of the State of Israel. Now, why 2,220 days? What does that represent? Okay, I'm going to go over the hour if I can. I don't know how to make this work faster. When a 360-year calendar, that's exactly 70 years to the very day. We see a 360-year calendar in Genesis 7:11 and Genesis 8:4, where those time periods of 5 months that are talked about during the Noah's flood is actually 5 30-day months. And then again, in Revelation 12:6 and Revelation 12:14, where we talk about 1,260 days and times and half a time being 3.5 years equals 42 30-day months. So the concept of a 360-day calendar is rooted in the biblical narrative. Now, others are starting to see the seals of Revelation 6 starting to be opened. How many people know Bo Pony? Have you ever heard of Bo Pony? Besides my wife, because I talked to her about Bo Pony. Bo Pony is not a theologian. He's not a pastor. Bo Pony is an analyst. He's a cycles analyst. And so he talks about time schemes and time cycles. He calls for the first seal to be opened at Hanukkah, December the 30th, 2019, with the eruption of COVID-19. However, I'm sorry, this is going to be longer than an hour if I don't know how to control this better.
It'll probably work better if you just put it down and just press it when you're done. You don't even have to point at it.
Well, my laptop's on the back table. It's not here in front of me. Yeah. So I'll see how it works. Revelation 6:2, where the scripture talks about he goes forth conquering and to conquer. While Pony sees the first of the seven seals was broken the last day of Hanukkah, December the 30th, 2019, by the World Health Organization. And in part two, I'm going to talk more about the World Health Organization and how it's involved in the prophecies of our day. But actually, the count begins on the 31st of December, the day after Hanukkah, where the World Health Organization finally published their declaration on the 31st of December that in China, there was the pneumonia of an unknown etiology detected in Wuhan in China. Their boat does economic cycles based upon past time cycles he finds in the scripture. And if you'll notice the underlined area talking about George Floyd riots corresponding to the second seal where peace has been taken from the earth. In that, he dates it. Okay, I just... The end. Thank you. Very questions? Thank you. Anyway, he targets the George Floyd riots as the beginning of civil unrest going throughout the globe. Did I do something?
Of course not.
Whoa, okay. Did you hear that, honey? It wasn't me. Yeah, and that's being recorded, too. Good observation. There we go. Excellent. The second of the seven seals was broken on Pentecost, May the 31st in 2020, when a George Floyd-style riot and violence broke out worldwide as peace was taken from the earth. On the third seal, he targets in the middle of the summer of this year. And these images are from his slide deck. You can get these off of the internet from him, which is a reference. The breaking the next seal, the third seal, brings about an economic collapse, the fall of Goliath, and the world financial system as we know it has been described in Daniel 2:34, resulting in a rebalancing or a rise of a new global economic system or financial system of honest money. Guys, silver and gold, not fake fiat paper and credit monies. The net result will be a hyperinflation, skyrocketing food and commodity prices, the likes which the world has never recorded in history. He comes from the reference of Revelation 6:6 that says, I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, a measure of wheat for a penny and three measures of barley for a penny. The Greek underlying phrase there is a chironix denarius. And a denarius, if you'll understand, is the monetary equivalent of not a penny, it's a tenth ounce of silver. So when you see gold and silver start to take off, food's going to be almost unaffordable to eat. I've been told by people who watch these trends and cycles that we'll come to a place in American history where we will work all day just to be able to food we need to eat. And that's is about as much economic power that people will have when these things start to happen. On March the 2020, U.S. stock market crashed 38% down, followed by a barrel of oil going to a price of negative $38 per barrel. Did any of you buy oil when they were paying you $38 to buy the oil from them? You missed out on that opportunity. I'm sorry. It happened to be a key date that he had been forecasting for about a year and a half to look for on the economic trends. This is a prelude to the coming economic collapse that's going to occur this year, according to Bolpone, God's rebalancing of the worldwide financial system. Have shipmasters and the company of ships and sailors of the earth pre-positioned for prophecy fulfillment. Business Insider on, September 21, talks about the dock workers taking record cargo ships backlogs, and things will be getting worse. Revelation 18:17, every shipmaster, the company of ships and sailors, as many traded by the sea, stood far off. I thought maybe this would be setting up to fulfill this, and I don't think it's panned out that way. But what we've seen is the congestion rates in the shipping seasons has been record numbers of almost 56 cargo ships waiting out offshore of California just to get an opportunity to come in and offload in the Long Beach and the Los Angeles docks. This is a fake catastrophe created by Governor Newsom in California, where he issued an executive order in 1919 where they had proposed new strategies to increase in demand in the primary and secondary markets of zero emission vehicles, which meant that if you weren't certified as a zero emission vehicle, you could not load your cargo or drive the flatbeds out of the docks unless you were zero emission compliant. So it almost killed the business in the docks. Shape up or ship out here, where the CalMatters website, diesel trucks, oil tankers, and other ships must comply with two new rules that are state's most ambitious strike against smog. The cost is going to run the state and the individuals up to $7 billion to come into compliance with this new state rule from Newsom. Have the most powerful position themselves for the fulfillment of Revelation 6:16. New York Post, when the going gets rough, the tough get going, to luxurious underground bunkers. Suddenly headed 6 feet under doesn't sound so bad, especially when new digs often include pre-stocked food and blast-proof doors. This corresponds to Revelation 16:15, where it talks about the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the chief captains, the mighty men and bondmen, every free man, hid in dens and in the rocks of the mountains and said, "Fall on us and hide us." This is the prophecies to happen. I'd always wondered why, if you're that powerful, why will you call for the rocks to fall upon you? You know, I just discovered, well, because you've got some luxurious apartment down about 300 feet below the ground, and you can think you can survive for quite a period of time. Fox News covered this idea. Business Insider. You should take a look at the 45 unreal photos of billionaire bunkers and how they've all decked them out. On the website End of the American Dream, the article, they are definitely getting prepared. How about you? Many individuals got to where they were today by staying a step ahead of everybody else. That's why it's so alarming that 2,150 corporate executives have sold off their shares in their own company in the month of August this year. What do they know? Of course, when things get really bad, many of the elite do not plan to stick around to see what happens. The following comes from the Guardian article, "Super Rich Preppers Are Planning to Save Themselves." Here's the article, "Tech billionaires are buying luxurious bunkers, hiring military security to survive societal collapse. They helped create, but like everything else they do, it has unintended consequences. The single question has occupied us for the rest of the hour. They knew armed guards would be required to protect their compounds from raiders as well as angry mobs. One had already secured a dozen Navy SEALs to make their way to his compound if he gave them the right clue. But how would he pay the guards once his crypto was worthless? And what would stop the guards from eventually choosing their own leader? The billionaires considered using special combination locks for the food supply that only they knew, or making the guards wear disciplinary collars of some kind in return for their survival." I don't think the Navy SEAL guys are going to tolerate that kind of stuff. "Or maybe building robots." That's the answer. "To serve as guards and workers if the technology could appear in time. Our nation's pre-positioning for the fulfillment of Revelation 18:8, where New York City starts with a press release back July 11th, 2022, prepare for nuclear preparedness in New York City. corresponding to there shall be plagues that come in a single day, death, mourning, famine, and utterly burning with fire. Business Insider, UN Secretary General says nuclear war is back on the table within the realm of possibility because of what's going on in the Ukraine and Russia. Our nation pre-positioning for the fulfillment of 1823, Revelation 1823. Let me get back. Electricity shortage and warnings grow across the United States. Now, this is a little bit older article from 2021, but it talks about the degradation of our electrical systems in California, Texas, and Indiana, that they're having a hard time, especially during the summer, with the air conditioning usage during the day. But Revelation 18:23 talks about the light of the candle shall shine no more in all of thee. So if we have a destruction of our electrical system in the United States, we're not going to see the lights in our nation, especially not from the satellites. We do, but we can't. COVID-19 has changed everything about the weddings. 18:23 part 2, or part B, says, the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more in all of thee. This is how COVID-19 thing has disrupted the wedding industry. Most number of weddings definitely declined, by the photographer Willie Hardy says. A lot of venues are not even having a lot of events during the COVID, or they've been cut the capacity on how many they could have in the building. And social distancing has chilled the wedding industry. Most couples doing an actual ceremony, they do it via Zoom just to get married, planning for large celebrations for later this year or next year, which I'd be happy to see. But COVID put a dark cloud over our lives in 2020, and it's going to take some time for guests to feel comfortable attending weddings. A wedding photographer says the pandemic set her back tens of thousands so far. Kristen Kaiser, wedding photographer, said, coronavirus has definitely had a negative impact on my business. Nearly all my spring and summer couples have either postponed their wedding or have seriously considered postponing. Garavaran is a caterer. He said, because of the coronavirus, my restaurants have came to a standstill. We still deliver food in the city but to keep our staff employed, but most of the weddings for 2020 have been postponed indefinitely. It's been a huge interruption to my business. The third part of Revelation 18:23 talks about merchants of the great men of the earth. By their sorceries, the nations were deceived. Here we go. The word sorceries is the Greek term pharmakia. We know that we use pharmaceuticals or pharmacy in the modern English language. That's the underlying Greek term for sorceries. It's also in Thayer's, what you need to pay attention to is under the heading of A for medication or administration of drugs. That term is only used that way in the Greek text of Xenophon. But when you look at all its times it appears in the New Testament or in the, I don't think it appears in the Septuagint, it talks about witchcraft. The use of the term pharmakia is always associated with witchcraft in the New Testament, not with medication administration. You also see it in Revelation 9:21, the same term. Pharmakia is still called sorceries in the King James. That's how they translate it. And then the word pelathanasan, where the deception occurs. Thayer's talks about apopelanado, and to be led away into error, into sin. This is not something where you fall away. This is where somebody takes your attention, grabs your attention, and leads you off the path. So the great merchants of the earth have two tools in their toolbox, pharmaceuticals and deception. And so we're going to look more closely at these two tools that they are using in order to deceive all the nations of the earth. We see also apopanathion in Mark 13:22, where it talks, false Christs, false prophets will rise, show signs and wonders, and they will seduce. Is the way King James translates that word. Virology Down Under, this is from a virologist down in Australia, wrote an article called COVID-19 is not a virus, but SARS-CoV-2 is. It's a very interesting article. For about 2 weeks we lived and published using and talked about a disease-causing virus called novel coronavirus. that name was always going to be create problems like, well, what do we call the next one? And after calling it novel coronavirus, the World Health Organization decided to change the name. So around January the 12th, this is 2020, they started calling it 2019 novel coronavirus, or 2019 nCoV. January 30th, just 18 days later, they changed the name again to 2019 novel coronavirus acute respiratory disease, or 2019 nCoV-ARDS. But then in February, they changed the name again to 2019 coronavirus disease, or COVID-19. The guys who actually are supposed to name the viruses finally gave up 2019 nCoV as a new name. They called it a severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus. So then we ended up with SARS-CoV-2. Now, it's a shame, he says, that HCoV-19 missed out. But as a result, understanding the names is now a complete and utterly misunderstood mess at every level. So let's dive in to see what we can come up with some everyday uses, he says. A virus isn't a disease, and a disease isn't a virus. An infectious disease is one that you can catch from somebody or someone else, but the disease isn't just a thing. The word disease can be defined as a state of non-normal health characterized by two or more of the following criteria, recognizing a causal agent and identifying a group of signs and symptoms. Disease is a bucket term which we pour the specific signs and symptoms and actually accompanied by how we test for the cause. We can add descriptions to the clinical course of outcomes, and what the disease is not, though, is a virus. A virus, in the case of the disease called COVID-19, is the cause of the signs and symptoms. So if there's a SARS-CoV-2 now, shouldn't there be a SARS-CoV-1? Let's see, differences and similarities between SARS-CoV and SARS-CoV-2 from the National Library of Medicine. In contrast to 22 and 23, SARS-CoV outbreak with a higher pathogenicity led to higher mortality rates. SARS-CoV-2 infection appears to be more contagious. Now, the way it works in virology types of diseases, the higher the contagion, the less the mortality rates are. People are less apt to get sick unto death because the virus needs a host that can support it. But if a virus has a higher mortality rate, then the spread of the disease is smaller because as soon as you get it, it knocks you off and doesn't have an opportunity to reproduce and migrate into another host. So where's the vaccine for SARS-CoV? Vaccine development in coronavirus 2003 and present. That's slide number 73. It says the genome sequence of SARS-CoV-2 is almost 80% similar to the SARS-CoV. Interesting. So after 4 years of animal clinical trials, the developers of several SARS-CoV vaccines were having difficulties after the animals were being re-exposed to the original SARS-CoV virus. Here are severe acute respiratory syndrome, vaccine efficacy in the ferrets who killed viruses and adeno-vector vaccines. What they reported was there's a high neutralizing antibody titers. Protection was incomplete for all, not some, all vaccine preparations and administration routes. So where are we with the vaccines? While there's much evidence that various vaccine strategies against SARS are safe and immunogenic, vaccinated animals still display significant disease upon challenge. Now, what it means upon challenge is they give you the vaccine and then they expose you to the disease to see how your immunity works. And what was happening to this period of time when they would give these vaccines to their animal studies and then re-expose them to the virus, all the animals died. That was in SARS-CoV-1 development. NBC reports that scientists were close to a coronavirus vaccine years ago, and then all of a sudden, magically, the money dried up. Early efforts to develop a SARS vaccine in animal clinical trials were plagued by a phenomenon known as vaccine-induced enhancement, meaning if you get the vaccine, it induces the effectiveness of the virus, and all the animals were dying. Immunization with SARS coronavirus vaccines leads to lung disorders when you're challenged again with the virus. The literature says the challenge of mice given any of the vaccines led to an occurrence of Th2 type immunopathy, suggesting hypersensitivity to SARS-CoV components was induced. Caution, in proceeding to the applications of SARS-CoV vaccines in human is indicated. So they were warning all the way back in 2012 about how to develop SARS-CoV-2 vaccines for humans. 4 years later, Dr. Peter Hotez claimed to have developed a vaccine, but nobody wanted to pay for it. From USA Today, fact check, vaccine for COVID-19 has been clearly 20 years in the making. Further testing reached an impasse when funding steadily declined in the years following the 2003 outbreak. Peter Hotez, a vaccine scientist and dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor down in Houston, their team collaborated with the National Laboratory to create a SARS vaccine in 2016. So how long does it take to make a vaccine and then get it into the patient population? According to Johns Hopkins on their vaccine research and development website, a typical time is anywhere from 5 to 10 years and sometimes longer. But if it takes 5 to 10 years to make a vaccine, how in less than a year do we get a COVID vaccine? Through emergency use authorization. Under Section 564 of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, the Secretary of Health and Human Services can declare that an emergency use authorization is appropriate. The Food and Drug Administration can authorize unapproved medical products and unapproved uses of approved medical products to be used in emergency to diagnose, treat, or prevent serious life-threatening diseases or conditions. So what is emergency use authorization? According to the website of the FDA, under the emergency use authorization, the FDA can allow the use of unapproved medical products, unapproved uses of approved medical products in an emergency to diagnose, treat, prevent serious or life-threatening diseases or conditions when certain statutory criteria can be met, including when there is no adequate, approved, or available alternatives. And if you'll remember, the FDA actually approved a COVID-19 vaccine, but they have not removed any of the emergency use products that are on the market at this time. So there's a paradox. We got something approved, but nobody's using it. When the Health and Human Services Secretary issued a declaration justifying the emergency use authorization, it becomes effective for the following companies that have had prior histories of prosecution and conviction for fraud. 10 of the biggest pharmaceutical settlements in history. Number 3, Pfizer. $2.3 billion fined before their drug Bextera, Geodon, Xyrex, and Lyrica because they were promoting, and this is what most of these fines have for, is because they promote the use of these medications for things that they're not authorized to do under the FDA. They eventually pulled Bextera from the market in 2005 after it was deemed unsafe. Johnson & Johnson, $2.2 billion in criminal fines, $485 million in civil settlements, $1.27 billion, because they approved Risperidol for treatment of schizophrenia, but the sales rep were promoting the use of that drug for dementia, for anxiety, agitation, depression, hostility, and confusion, none of which that drug was authorized to be administered for. But they were hot trying to sell it to everybody. There's one more here. For AstraZeneca. I'm sorry. I must be talking in a language the computer doesn't understand. There we go. For their drug Seroquel. It's an antipsychotic drug manufactured by AstraZeneca. It was approved in 1997 just for psychotic disorders. It was supposed to be a narrow, short-term treatment of schizophrenia. However, what AstraZeneca was doing was marketing the drug for additional uses like the treatment of aggression, anger management, Alzheimer's, anxiety, attention deficit disorder, bipolar maintenance, dementia, depression, mood disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, sleeplessness. Actually, it was the magic liquid that was supposed to cure everything psychological. In addition, AstraZeneca had paid money to doctors to have them publish articles on the effectiveness of this drug in trials that were not approved by the FDA. So these are the people that are making your vaccines now that have a history of being sued for fraud and losing their cases. There's a substantive evidence that now appears to show that COVID-19 event was planned long before COVID-19. Now, Daily Mail, slide 104, the scientists claim COVID virus contains a tiny chunk of DNA that's identical to a sequence patented by Moderna 3 years before anybody knew anything about COVID-19. Here's a picture of the virus on the right. The middle image is the same virus rotated 90 degrees, and in the box you see there the furin cleavage site at GL690 to THR676. Under patent number US95870032 is a modified nucleotides for the production of oncology-related proteins and peptides by Moderna. But if you look at the bottom, the original application was in 2016. In the latest study published by Frontiers in Virology, research compared COVID-19's makeup to millions of sequence proteins from an online database. The virus makes up 30,000 letters of genetic code that carries information with it that needs to spread, known as nucleotides. It's the only coronavirus of its type to carry 12 unique letters that allow its spike protein to be activated by a common enzyme called furin, allowed to be spread between human cells with ease. The analysis of the original genome found the virus shares a sequence of 19 specific letters with genetic section that is owned and patented by Moderna, which has a total of 3,300 nucleotides. In the expose, while you were distracted by the battle of Ukraine, documents were published confirming Moderna actually created COVID-19 virus. In February 23rd, the Daily Mail ran an article showing that Moderna had patented a 19-base letter nucleotide which codes for the furin cleavage site in COVID-19. They cited a paper entitled MSH3 Homonology and Potential Recombination Linked to SARS-CoV-2 at the furin cleavage site, which they calculated the chances of a 19-nucleotide sequence patented by Moderna randomly appearing in COVID-19 throughout the world does not appear anywhere in nature, that the probability of that by accident is 1 in 3 trillion. So why did Professor Montier choose to spend the last years of his life proving that COVID-19 was man-made and that the spike proteins and therefore the vaccines were an existential threat to the species? In these years from 87 to 89, he didn't have to do this because his reputation was always established. But when the Omicron virus came out, he felt like his work was done. There we go. COVID-19 was not made in 2019. It was made from 19 nucleotide Moderna-specific chimeric CGG for AGA, furin cleavage site, which does not occur anywhere in nature. The New World Order, the ultimate proof COVID-19 was planned to usher in the New World Order. I forget what the website was. Slide 113. Here are patents that exists for testing for COVID-19. You see at the bottom, the original provisional patent was issued in 2015 for the patent holder for systems and methods of testing for COVID-19. So even the name existed before 2019. Then U.S. patent application for coronavirus. I didn't know that the coronavirus was a patented virus. Application was in July the 23rd, 2015. The abstract says the coronavirus may be used as a vaccine for treating and preventing a disease such as infectious bronchitis in a subject. The World Integrated Trade Solutions on its website announces COVID-19 tests were shipped around the world in 2017. Did anybody bother to tell you that? In the Rockefeller Foundation, they have a publication under their global business network called Scenarios for the Future in Technology and International Development, published in May 2010. In there, there's an article called Lockstep, in which the Rockefeller Foundation describes how to shut your country down from the top and control all the population in the midst of the civil unrest. It's a playbook for what we've just experienced. The Global Preparedness Monitoring Board, which is an entity created by the director of the General World Health Organization and the president of the World Bank. In their September 2019 issue, they published an article, The World at Risk, in which the article described almost nearly perfectly what the medical results have we've experienced in 2020 and 21. They just lay out a playbook. Bill Gates, in December 19, 2019, issues a Twitter saying, "What's next for our foundation? I'm particularly excited about what's next year could mean for the best of the Best Buys in global health, vaccines." Bill Gates, the World Economic Forum, and Johns Hopkins hosted Event 201 in October of 2019. The exercise illustrated areas where the public-private partnerships will be necessary during the response to a severe pandemic in order to diminish large-scale economic and societal earthquakes. So they rehearsed all this stuff in October. Yeah, there we go. All right. The posters that distributed throughout France were printed 4 days before they even had a COVID victim in France. If you kind of blew this up a little bit, you can see the poster was printed on the 20th of January. But if you go to Wikipedia, they say that there was a virus was only confirmed to have reached in the 24th of January, 4 days later. But they already got the promotional materials out. So who, or WHO, pays the bills for all of this? This is a copy of the World Bank's project appraisal document for this event. The financing package covers $6 billion, in which on March the 3rd, 2020, the executive board came together, created a project called COVID-19 Strategies Preparedness and Response Program. And it covers multiphasic probiotic approaches, contingency emergency responses, fragile states, small states, and responses to natural and man-made disasters. The project is funded out to March the 31st, 2025. They're prepared to pay for this whole thing for the next couple of years coming down the pike. So that's when I would probably expect to see an end to this COVID stuff. Something else will come in its place. Now, going back to Revelation 18:23, the scope and foundation of fraud and deception, Aplanathasin, we see Dr. Merrill Nash, who worked on the J&J vaccine. She said, "Yesterday, February 26th, the FDA Vaccine Advisory Committee met to give its assent to the third COVID vaccine candidate applying for emergency use authorization. I spent another day just listening to the testimony. So this one requires only one dose. The committee members simply don't know what they have to watch out for, and even one of them asked if the FDA could help them suggest what types of issues they had when they issued the Ebola virus or when the military had an adenovirus and what they did. The FDA's response to the question was, there was no response. Most of the sponsors at that time was Johnson & Johnson presenters were from the Janssen division out of Belgium. Many of them did not even speak English as their native tongue, so the combination of the audio transmissions kept dropping out over the website, and in the inability to catch many of the words made it a great challenge for her to understand what was being presented. The FDA has refused to inspect COVID vaccine manufacturing plants before they authorized them. I suspect the FDA administrators were directed not to slow down Trump's warp speed. While Johnson & Johnson's Janssen division designed and tested its new adenovirus vectored spike protein vaccine, the vaccine is actually being produced in a factory that was just taken out of mothballs with hundreds of new employees that have never, ever before produced a vaccine for mass use. It's owned by Emergent BioSolutions, a company notorious for poisoning soldiers with its anthrax vaccine, which has failed multiple anthrax vaccine inspections. But Emergent BioSolutions, on the board is Catherine Zoom, who is the former head of the FDA's Center for Biologics. And now she's advisory to their manufacturing vaccine project. So are we guinea pigs? The emergency use legislation specified that recipients must be given considerably more information that's provided for with other vaccines. And I've included the language below, but still I wonder how many recipients understand that they're part of a vast experiment. The requirement is that the Health and Human Services Secretary authorize the emergency use of a product of the significant known and potential benefits of and the risk of such use, the option to accept or refuse the products, and if you refuse those products, you know, there are alternative products that are available and what their benefits and risk are. So how about that informed consent disclosure to the vaccine? Back to the National Library of Medicine, we see that the informed consent disclosure to the vaccine trial subjects to the risk of COVID-19 vaccines are worsening clinical disease. Vaccines for SARS, MERS, and RSV have never been approved. It's in the science literature. And the data generated in development testing of these vaccines suggest a serious mechanistic concern that this risk is sufficiently obscured in the clinical trial protocols and consent forms for ongoing COVID-19 vaccine trials that the adequate patient comprehension of this risk is unlikely to occur, obviating the truly informed consent of subjects in these trials. From a set and length and readability of informed consent documents from PubMed, that all documents exceeded the grade level of 9 in complexity and scored lower than 60 in the formal reading ease metric, which constitutes difficult. These findings suggest that existing COVID-19 vaccine informed consent documents are too long, they're too difficult to read, they exceed the 9th grade language in complexity. By comparison, all United States Army manuals are written for a 6th grade reading level. That's the standard for Army regulations. So not only is the risk sufficiently obscured with regard to vaccines, a very interesting and timely survey in the 8th of July 2021 became published from the Netherlands that more than half the scientists admit to research misconduct. A landmark survey of 6,800 participants reveals that the study, which is yet to be peer-reviewed, found that 51.3% of participants admitted to having engaged in at least one questionable research practice, that they added that 1 in 12 had reported falsifying and fabricating research data, at least one during the time period once they were doing the survey. So if we're to trust the science, what do we do when there is no science? From the Journal of Infectious Diseases, the article entitled Exposed to Influenza Aerosols During the Routine Patient Care, slide 154, this is what they used to justify social distancing. Now, David Martin explains here in his commentary on the entire article, which is rather lengthy. He said, social distancing of 6 feet has been promoted as a means of preventing person-to-person transmission of influenza-like viruses. While one study hypothesized that the infection would only happen in a 6-foot range, the study explicitly states that person-to-person transfer was not tested, and the viability of the virus at 6 feet was not even the subject of its investigation. But this did not stop misrepresentation of the study to be used as the entire basis, or not maybe entire, but the significant basis of unverified medical countermeasures of social distancing. To date, no study has established the efficacy of social distancing to modify the transmission of SARS-CoV-2. And there they referenced this article from the Journal of Infectious Diseases. So now, well over a year and a half into this operation, other nations are rejecting the vaccines on legitimate grounds. Pfizer vaccines are being rejected in Japanese cities, and it has to do with the Japanese Ministry of Health pulled 1.6 million doses because of the contamination that were inside the vials. Some type of black substance was floating in the vials. The Czech Republic destroyed 45,000 AstraZeneca doses. This is centers around the issue of having blood clots in young people after being vaccinated. You know, UK throws out 800,000 AstraZeneca doses, principally on the same issue about the blood clot risk. North Korea rejects AstraZeneca coronavirus because of the blood clot risk. They're looking at 2 million doses of AstraZeneca's vaccines were destroyed. In Italy, there was a cessation for people under the age of 60 for the vaccines because of the blood clot risk. Even the antibody treatments Astrazeneca was promoting, they initially confessed in June of 2021, it did not meet the goals of preventing symptomatic COVID-19 exposure when patients had been re-exposed back to the novel coronavirus. In Sweden, 30,000 suspected side effects from the corona vaccines, of which half of those side effects came from AstraZeneca. Official tally suspected side effects resulted from COVID vaccine in Switzerland surpassed 30,000 in the majority of the cases occurring in people inoculated with AstraZeneca shot. Slide 169. Australia refuses to buy J&J vaccines due to the AstraZeneca is the same type of vaccine because of the blood clot issue. Both vaccines are currently being investigated for rare links to blood clots. Denmark becomes the first country to stop using AstraZeneca, and it accused AstraZeneca of breach of contract because they failed initially to produce the vaccines for their availability before this blood clot issue became out into public. The commission threatened to block exports of the jabs out of the EU until the company fulfills its outstanding orders, and AstraZeneca denies breaking any of the contract obligations. In Brazil, they use Sinovac, which is a Chinese-designed vaccine. They suspend the use of 12 million vaccines in Brazil over the same issue. And in addition to that, the 12 million doses of the vaccine developed in China's Sinovac lab were produced in a plant that was not authorized for the production of vaccines. They also told them that we have, you know, another 17 batches, about 9 million doses, that are still being produced in the same plant. So I'm sure those never even made it into Brazil. The Children's Health Defense Network in March the 30th, Germany stops the use of AstraZeneca after 31 reports of rare blood clots and 9 resultant deaths. All these patients but 2 were women from the ages of 20 to 63 years old. There's a website called Vaccine Deaths that shows that you have a risk of 2.5 times higher of getting myocarditis if you receive the Moderna vaccine. In the expose, the Freedom of Information request shows that 2,207 people died within 28 days of having the COVID vaccine in Scotland during February. And then, now, it's not definitive that the COVID vaccine killed them. It's just that a correlation that within that time period, these people died. 28 days prior, then what they did in the health studies is they add these names onto the COVID list. And back in later in September, 80% of the COVID deaths in Scotland during August were people that had already been vaccinated. So, because instead of presenting them week by week as they'd done when the number of cases and hospitalizations, they changed the logic, include the deaths from back to December. A viral image alleges that the vaccines caused 175% increase in the COVID-19 deaths and ignores the outside impact of viruses on the unvaccinated. Effectively, what we're seeing throughout the world is they're reporting true numbers falsely to give the impression of the expanse of the COVID-19 plandemic, if I could use that term. In Ireland, 54% of the patients with COVID have already been vaccinated. Toronto Business Journal, 12,184 dead and 1.19 million injuries reported in the European database for adverse drug reactions for COVID-19 vaccines. They list The vaccine from Moderna, from Pfizer, BioNTech, AstraZeneca, and Janssen, where that 50% of the injuries recorded, the serious injuries equaled over 50% of the population that was reported in that time period. They weren't incidental or small injuries, they were significant injuries. Okay. From Zero Hedge in July the 17th, 2021, slide 190, the RNA vaccine inventor, this guy is Robert Malone, made the observation that most vaccinated countries in the world that are experiencing surges in COVID-19 are the ones that have been vaccinated already. The countries that are least vaccinated are not showing surges in COVID-19. So how these products migrated into the market is very disturbing. Moderna and Pfizer intentionally lost their clinical trial control group testing vaccine efficacy and safety. Oh, come on. This is supposed to be smooth, transitions here. Vaccine companies conducting the trials decided to break protocol and notify the control group that they weren't vaccinated, and almost everybody in the control group then were vaccinated, which effectively destroys any data from the survey. Now, in the Business Insider, Moderna's groundbreaking coronavirus vaccine was designed in just 2 days. How many knew that? December 19, 2020. On January 11th, researchers from China published the genetic sequence for the coronavirus, and then 2 days later, Moderna's team, NIH scientists, finalized the targeted genetic sequence that they would use in the vaccine. But perhaps what's more remarkable is that Moderna designs its vaccines in just 2 days in January, even before people even heard of the coronavirus. That wouldn't have been possible without the technology that Moderna has bet on since its founding, and that's the messenger RNA vaccines therapy. Utilizing messenger RNA technology meant that both Pfizer and Moderna only needed the gene sequence to make a vaccine, and there was no virus that needed to be cultivated in the labs. In August of this year, 2022, Moderna filed suit against Pfizer in breach of patent issues. But what you find in the pleading in paragraph 48 is that Moderna confesses that the first clinical batch of COVID-19 vaccine was manufactured February 7th, 2020, just 4 weeks after the sequence of SARS-CoV-2 was published. Now, if you remember before, generally, it takes 5 to 10 years to make a vaccine, test it, get it approved, and get it into the patient population. Using genetic sequencing and computer simulations rather than actual virus has caused some very disturbing disruptions in the scientific world with regard to the actual virus itself. From global research, health science institutions worldwide have no record of a SARS-CoV virus being isolated and purified. Starting 2 years ago, the central question was raised, is there a reliable evidence that SARS-CoV-2 has been isolated from unadulterated samples taken from deceased patients? Worth noting is that according to Berlin Virology Institute and the World Health Organization in January 2020, that they did not have in its possession details regarding the isolation and the identification of a SARS-CoV-2 virus. Moreover, because the relevant details concerning isolation and purification are not available, the World Health Organization decided, pursuant to the advice of the Berlin Virology Institute, to quote-unquote customize the PCR test using a similar 2003 SARS virus, subsequently renamed SARS-1, the one we were looking for earlier, as a point of reference for detecting genetic fragments of the 2019 SARS-CoV-2. Update is October 29, 2021. We now have 127 institutions over 25 countries on record. All failed to provide or even cite one recorded describing the purification of the alleged COVID virus from any patient sample on the planet by anyone. And all these documents are available publicly at the website, the State of the Nation, in July the 3rd, 2021. Follows the same idea that there's no record of the SARS-CoV-2 isolation and purification anywhere. Let's go back. And here are the PDFs that cover 69 institutions in 20 countries or jurisdictions asking for evidence of the purification, isolation, and existence of SARS-CoV-2. From the Joe Rizzoli, his own website, he claims, "I'm a clinical lab scientist. COVID-19 is fake, so wake up, America." He said, "I have a PhD in virology and immunology. I'm a clinical lab scientist and tested 1,500 quote-unquote supposedly positive COVID-19 samples collected here in Southern California. Well, my lab team and I did the testing through the Cox postulates, and the Cox postulates requires you to isolate and purify a virus or bacteria in order to prove that it is what it is and that it does what it does. We used scanning electronic microscope, and we found no COVID of any of the 15 samples. What we did find was it was mostly influenza A and influenza B, but not a single case of COVID. So they all spoke to the CDC and asked for viable samples of COVID, which the CDC said they could not provide because they didn't have samples. So there were four research papers that do describe a genomic extracts of COVID-19 virus, but they were never successful in isolating and purifying the samples. All four of the papers written on COVID-19 only describe small bits of RNA, which were only 37 to 40 base pairs long, which is not a virus. A virus is something to 30,000 to 40,000 base pairs long. Now here's the lab manuals issued by the CDC for the PCR testing. In the manual, you'll find this statement, these statements. Since no qualified virus isolates of the 2019 nCoV were available for CDC use at the time the test was developed and this study conducted, assays designed for the detection of the 2019 nCoV RNA were tested with characteristic stocks of in vitro transcribed full-length RNA. So they start designing this test for something that they don't even have. Negative results do not preclude the 2019 COVID infections and should not be used as a sole basis for treatment or other patient management decisions. The detection of viral RNA may not even indicate the presence of an infectious virus or that 2019 COVID virus is the causative agent for the clinical symptoms. Straight from the CDC. Now, Gary Mullins is the inventor of the PCR test, and here's what he had to say.
I don't think you can misuse these errors. The results, the interpretation of it. See, if you can say, if they could find this virus in you at all, in a PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody. It starts making you believe in the sort of Buddhist notion that everything is contained in everything else, right? Because if you can amplify one simple molecule up to something that you can really measure, the PCR can do, then there's just very few molecules that you don't have at least one single one of them in your body. Okay? So that can be thought of as a misuse of it, just to claim that it's meaningful. But the real misuse of it is that you don't need to test for HIV, you don't need to test for the other 10,000 retroviruses that are unnamed, also in the subject. If somebody that's got HIV, generally is going to have almost anything that you can test for, because they have definitely, HIV is a fairly rare virus. There's only 1 million of us out of 250, 300 million people in America that have.
All right. The reason he talks about HIV and not SARS-CoV-2 is because Kerry Mullis died 4 months before the 2019 outbreak. But he was the inventor of the PCR test that was the diagnostic tool that was required in the first year of the COVID outbreak. By December the 31st, 2021, I believe, the CDC then changed the diagnostic test in which we find positive or negative tests for the SARS-CoV-2. But remember what he said, the guy who designed the test. You can find almost anything in anybody using the PCR test. Here's Fauci.
I have a question, and what is now sort of evolving into a bit of a standard that if you get a cycle threshold of 35 or more, that the chances of it being replication competent are minuscule. Mm-hmm. So that if somebody, and you know, we do have patients, and it's very frustrating for the patients as well as for the physicians, somebody comes in and they repeat their PCR and it's like 37 cycle threshold. But you never, if you almost never can culture virus from a 37 threshold cycle. So I think if somebody does come in with 37, 38, even 36, you gotta say, no, it's just dead nucleotides, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it doesn't look like the most exciting conference. There are a bunch of virologists talking, but what he says here is really, really important. What he admits here is really, really important. But so you're just saying about the PCR test, the main test for coronavirus, for a long time. He amplifies genetic matter from the virus in cycles. Each cycle, it amplifies it more. The greater the amount of virus, the less cycles are needed to amplify it, because there's more cycles there. The number of cycles needed to find the virus is called the cycle threshold. And it's never included in the results of the doctors. And this is according to the New York Times. Most tests in the U.S. are set at 40. Now, Fauci just said anything that goes beyond 36 should be considered false positive. So I think that's really a blockbuster. So what does that mean?
Okay, two points to take away is that the cycle thresholds are not included in most of the reports that go to your physician, so they don't know how many times they've cycled your PCR to see what viral fragments are in there. And anything above a 35, according to Fauci, should be considered a false positive. And that according to the New York Times, 40 cycles is what is being routinely used in the United States. So here's another strange phenomenon related to the COVID-19 event. 61,000 people died in the worst flu season in the past decade, but COVID-19 has killed 8 times that many. So normally, on average, we have 36,000 people in this country that die from the flu every year, but during the COVID outbreak, we had only 22,000, a third less of the people in the population, according to death certificates, did not die from the flu, which may indicate, if you have a science mind like some, that COVID may be a cure for the flu. So where did they go? International Journal of Vaccine Theory, Practice, and Research, the article entitled What's Called So-Called COVID Vaccines, Part 1, Evidence of a Global Crime Against Humanity, from David Hughes. He makes the statement there raises a great grave questions about the true purpose of the dangerous experimental injections that so far have been shot into 5.3 billion people. Over two-thirds of the human race, including children, and apparently without informed consent or any notice of what the contents were. Unless these 26 researchers and research teams discussed in this article are very much mistaken, we're looking at what a New Zealand doctor calls, Matt Shelton, is the biggest crime in history. From the expose, the government published horrific figures on COVID vaccine deaths, that 481 are dead within a month. One in 246 are dead within 60 days, and one in 73 are dead during May 2022. The Office of National Statistics is the United Kingdom's largest independent producer of official statistics and the recognized National Statistical Institute in the UK. And on July the 6th, that's where they published this data set from January 2021 to May 2022. According to the ONS, they have, within 1 month of vaccination, 9,891 people died, and with COVID as a diagnosis, and within 1 month of vaccination, a total of 82,555 people died from any other related cause, but it was correlated, their death was correlated to receiving the vaccine. So this means that in total, 92,000 people died within 1 month of having the vaccine between January 2021 and May 2022, even if the cause of death was something unrelated to the taking the vaccine. Now, this is from the website called How Bad Is My Batch? It's an excellent database, and what they do is they archive, if you see up the upper left-hand corner, check your lot number. They keep a record of whatever your lot number is from whatever vaccine you got from Pfizer, AstraZeneca, or J&J, and they'll look at the lethality of it, and he'll publish his reports from the VAERS, Vaccine Adverse Reaction Report. And he says, in February 2021, I looked at 456 deaths that were recorded in the VAERS. And what you see is 127 people died within 24 hours of taking the vaccine. This is not stating these people were killed by the vaccine. They may have had a heart attack. They may have died from cancer. They may have been a car wreck or something associated like that. But curiously, over 30% of the reports have people dying within 24 hours of receiving the vaccine. So let's quickly review, because everybody wants to go to lunch. Several current events appear to contain elements described in specific end-time prophecies located within the scripture. The Gentiles' acknowledgement of the nation of Israel seems to have activated events that correspond to the last days. And the principal mechanism for merchants of the earth is the use of pharmakia and deception, deceiving nation states and their peoples all across the globe. In part two, what we will look at is the continuation of medical disclosures that are not available to the general population, how legal structure of this pandemic was constructed and launched in a brilliantly wicked way, and how the technical infrastructure is now being implemented for the mark of the beast. And four, how God has provided a remedy for us if we'll obey his commands. And that's what we'll cover in part two. Thank you.